Hello, and welcome back to Moments in Time with GCC Students. My name is Bryce Peltier, and this episode is all about human connections. To start us off, we've got Eilis Kramer, Juliana Rodriguez, Pedro Hernandez, and Shelley Ortiz with touching interviews all about family. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
If someone were to ask you to tell them a story, what would that story be?
There's two. There is what I call the 10-year journey that I'm still on, and that's a whole 10-year journey of me battling Crohn's disease and how it's affected me and my walk with God and just my view on life. The second one that I would tell somebody is my whole walk through my high school theater class where I had my first big role as Horton the Elephant, which helped me grow just massively as a person.
From those two stories, what would be the biggest point in them?
For the 10-year journey, the biggest point would be, you know, it's kind of hard to narrow it down, but I would say just trusting God, truly letting go of all that you have and giving it to Jesus and surrendering yourself fully and completely. Horton the Elephant would be teaching you that the best you can be is you. You don't need to hide behind a mask or a facade to make people like you. If they don't like who you are, who God made you to be, in my opinion, they're not worth time of day because we are fearfully and wonderfully made. So the true people that love you will accept you for your faults, your benefits, everything.
What has been or what was the hardest thing in those two stories to go through or to do?
Well, the 10-year journey is just going through it, especially now in the recent time period where I'm kind of going solo more, when this kind of affected me more when I was a kid. So mom and dad were always there, but now I'm an adult and now I gotta deal with it by myself. Go down the scary medical field, trusting God through what I don't understand. Horton the Elephant, the biggest struggle for me was getting past other people's opinions of me before I went in. It was taking off those masks and shackles and labels that they did people in my past and embracing the true me that people saw and wanted to bring out more.
Thank you so much, CJ, for being my test subject for this interview. I love you.
Thank you, Eilis. Thank you for being a fantastic little sister, and I love you very much.
Bye.
This is Juliana Rodriguez with Angelica Curio, and today we're going to be talking a little bit about how her daily life was impacted by COVID-19. So, Angelica, how about you introduce yourself a bit?
Hi, my name is Angelica Curio, a mother of two. I used to have a full-time job at a dental place, and due to COVID, I was let go back in March of 2020.
What were some of the things you did for that dental company?
I was a biller, and I billed for a California practice. What they do is they go to kids' schools and fix their teeth, and then we will bill the insurance. And that's where I would come in and send the bills off to the insurance.
And how did that affect you as COVID began?
First of all, in March, they told us that we were going to be laid off for 6 months. But as COVID started getting worse and schools shutting down in California, there was no more work for us, and they let go of a group of us.
So you said you were a mother of two. How did that affect your home life and, like, what are the ages of, like, your kids?
Okay. I went from having an 8-to-5 job to being a stay-at-home mom. I have a 19-year-old and a 7-year-old. And my 19-year-old, she's in school at home, and she pretty much takes care of herself. But my 7-year-old, I've had to relearn some of the things that I learned when I was a kid in school. Sometimes I feel like I'm her teacher, because as much as I would like for her focus to be 100% when she's online, it's not. And I think that's been one of the hardest impacts that we had with COVID, is having to be in school with my 7-year-old, making sure she's paying attention.
Besides being there for your 7-year-old, is there any other sort of involvement you have, like, educational-wise? Like you mentioned, like, you feel like you're going to school, learning all that stuff again with your 7-year-old. Is there, like, any other instances where you feel like that?
Yes. Another impact that it's had in my family is that it's also impacted my sister and her 2 girls. So her girls come to my house, and sometimes it gets crazy because I have 3 kids on the table, each with their teacher learning online. My sister didn't get impacted as far as letting her go. So I took on the responsibility to be the adult that's present while they're in class. And sometimes it's hard because I can't split myself between the 2 7-year-olds, because my sisters are a 7-year-old and a 15-year-old. But we've made it work this far, and I'm hoping that with COVID getting better, that my daughter can go back to school in August.
So now that COVID is starting to recede, and you plan on sending your youngest to physical, right? You plan on sending her back physically to school. What are your plans as an adult, as a mom, like, now that COVID's receding? How are you going to recover from what happened?
I think I'm going to take this as an opportunity. I also have me and my sister started a business before COVID, and it's being an event coordinator, and it was hard because at the time, you know, COVID, everything shut down, so we kind of put it on stop. And I think that now that my daughter's going back to school, it would be a good opportunity to focus on reopening our small business and making it a successful one.
Well, thank you for your time. Thank you for your honesty. COVID has been hard on a lot of us.
No problem, anytime.
Hello, so I'm here with my little sister Valerie, and she'll be helping me with my interview today. Valerie, if you just want to introduce yourself real quick.
Hi, my name is Valerie. I am Peter's little sister, and I'm going to be helping him with his homework today.
All right, thank you, Valerie. Okay, so I have a few questions for you. So last year was pretty rough for everyone. How was 2020 particularly hard for you?
So 2020 was very hard for me. The only reason was because I myself have gone through a lot of things, but I've gone through a lot of medical issues, which is including my thyroid, biopsies, blood tests, ultrasounds. And that was very hard for me as a young person, because, like, that just made me more depressed in sort of way.
And what sort of medical issues were you going through?
I was going through, like I said, thyroid issues, but for that, I went through thyroid cancer. I went through surgery too to remove my thyroid so the cancer wouldn't be there anymore. But after that, just for extra precaution, they gave me a treatment, an iodine treatment, just so those extra cancer cells could be gone. And so for right now, I'm doing pretty well with my cancer situation.
What were some of the things that you were able to do to help you sort of get through this?
Well, actually, I have a dog. She's one of my favorite dogs here in this house. She's helped me a lot through my illnesses because every time I wake up, I see her, I look at her, she makes me happy, and she's the one that helps me get through my day. But other than that, what helps me get through my day are my teachers, my family. Also, I really enjoyed watching anime, and that really helped me a lot because like it just distracted me a lot from thinking about my cancer and my whole medical issues.
And which dog was it that helped you the most?
So I would say she's pretty, how would you call it? Pretty chunky. pretty, yeah, like I said, she's pretty chunky, pretty round. She's blonde. She's pretty small too, but we named her Becas for that because she has like little spots on her little snout area.
And which animes have you been watching and which ones have been your favorite to watch?
So lately I've been watching an anime called Toleban Hanako-kun. Yes, it's a very weird name, but I love that anime. It just talks about a ghost and a girl. They're like becoming best friends through this curse that they have with each other. And this other anime that I'm watching is My Hero Academia. It's about this kid that doesn't have a power because everybody in the world has a power, but it's very rare that you don't have one. So this kid doesn't have a power. He ends up getting his power and goes to a high school so he could be a hero. And there's many obstacles overcoming him, so he tries to graduate his high school, and it's still ongoing, so I don't really know what's happening. And so there's this other anime that is mostly like a family favorite. It's called Attack on Titan. I didn't get into it by myself. My brother Peter, he helped me get into it. Actually, I started liking it, and then it started having like really dramatic moves, and I really liked it because of the like high dramatic or like drama and the low drama, and that's what made me like really love anime itself.
Awesome, Valerie. Well, thank you. Our interview got interrupted by my dog, just fine. But thank you, Valerie, so much for helping me out with this.
My name is KK McLaughlin. I'm 28 years old, and I'm from Phoenix, Arizona.
This is my girlfriend, KK. And due to childhood trauma, she has little memory before she was 13, and almost no memory of her dad that died when she was 7.
I've collected information and stories and anecdotes through my mom and other family members and close family friends, but it does feel misleading sometimes. Not misleading in a bad way, but I know that nobody's perfect, but most people describe my dad as a saint. That's the word they use.
And Kiki's mother is a storyteller and constantly tells stories of Kiki's father, though it's hard to ignore the disappointed look in her face when Kiki doesn't remember those precious memories.
My mom will tell me stories, and I know the stories by heart, but I don't think she likes telling the stories to me anymore because I don't give her the reaction that she wants.
How does that feel?
Feels really weird. It feels like she's anticipating a reaction that I truly cannot give her.
After the death of Joe, Kiki's mom held on to boxes of stuff. And recently, we came across never-seen-before VHS tapes of Kiki's father.
It was the first time I remember hearing my dad's voice, which made me pretty upset. And it was that same kind of feeling of not quite being an active participant. Like finding out that I was the star of a movie, but I don't remember starring in it, and I don't remember ever seeing it or participating in it. But there were a lot of familiar faces. Like I knew probably almost everyone on the tapes, but it did feel really weird seeing like my little self interacting with everyone because it doesn't really feel like it was me or that I got the chance to do that.
If you could just, you know, have a very short conversation, like one exchange, what would be what you would want to say or ask?
I don't think a conversation could give me what I want. I would tell him that his reputation precedes him, that there are so many people that are still alive that told me thousands, probably thousands of times, like, you need to know that your dad loved you more than anything. And that's been what I have, because I didn't have him. I'd probably want to know if he was proud of me. I just kind of want to tell him about my life and about you. And, like, I don't know, I think I've accomplished a lot despite the circumstances. Yeah.
That was some really great stuff. Next up, we've got some interviews on the educational side from myself, Noelle Hernandez, and Baylen Mendoza. While it's easy to focus on our own internal struggles, our own journeys, sometimes it's worth sitting down with a friend, someone you might think you know. You might learn a thing or two, and so today I'm joined by my friend, Benjamin King. And I hope I can learn a little bit more about him. For the lovely audience at home, could you please tell us your name?
Name's Benjamin King. I am 20 and I attend ASU.
What are you doing there at the moment?
I'm studying to be an aerospace engineer. I've always had an interest and a love for space. I've watched Star Trek for most of my life, and I have a bunch of merchandise in the background for it. And one of the things that I always enjoyed was the team and the collaboration and sort of the family dynamic that a lot of these shows had. And the ones that I gravitated towards the most were the engineers, especially like Geordi from The Next Generation, because he was blind. And so, like, him having that disability and then myself having a learning disability, I was like, you know, if he can do that, like, why can't I do that?
Now, with Ben's focus on aerospace engineering, it was inevitable that our conversation would drift towards COVID. COVID breaking out was probably not the best time to be a aerospace engineer.
No.
I did want to go a little bit more on that. What would your average week look like before COVID, and what does it sort of look like now?
Since COVID, I've basically have barely left the house. ASU's stance basically was, we're going to cut back on most of your breaks, and we're going to shorten your semester. The workload I have in the engineering course is already fairly intense. ASU has provided little support in this matter, because it's like, whoever made that call didn't take the student body's health into consideration. It has pushed a lot of us to the edge. I mean, there are points where literally, like, in our study group, someone will break down crying.
That struck me. And so it wasn't long before I had a follow-up question. I did want to go back to touching on mental health, since, you know, it's been a major factor in both of our lives. Would you say that it's, for you, is there anything specifically that you have, or is it more just like a general deficit in terms of like how healthy you feel mentally?
I have OCD, I have anxiety, I have depression, and it's there's a lot of stigma with it, because it's like the big perplexity is a lot of people think depression is you are always internally sad, and a lot of people also associate like OCD with being tidy and neat. And that's not what OCD is. It's a side effect of it, I guess is the best way to put it. But OCD is more generally of, you imagine having thoughts commonly of things that are just pretty horrific, but you would never do them. And it's like, you know, people have always like imagined like accidentally driving into the wrong lane and then hitting someone. But that's like perpetually my days are guided by that. I'm hypersensitive about my environment and I'm hypersensitive the way the world is around me. So that way I don't make, you know, some outrageous mistake that I think might happen.
I feel like that's one of the lesser talked about things that OCD does. I feel like that sort of goes into how, like, even just mental illnesses that you know can affect people differently, vastly. And I know for me, I always look at it like one of the biggest dangers is always this want for people to self-diagnose mental health.
Yes.
You can support people going through mental health issues without having any yourself. For you, like, just having friends that know that yeah. This is like a thing that you have, that does a lot more than just, you know, having somebody say like, well, I felt that way too, I know how you feel. Yes. Unfortunately, my time with Ben came to a close. Thanks for stopping by. It was nice hearing, you know, your point of view on stuff, and overall it was a pleasure having you, so thank you.
Thank you for having me and letting me talk about my experiences to, you know, help teach people something.
The person I'm interviewing today is Karina Hernandez, who is currently a kindergarten teacher. She went to Grand Canyon University to get her teaching degree, and this is my first question to her.
How long have you been, like, teaching?
I've been teaching for 5 years now.
So, like, what grades?
So when I first started teaching, I started in third grade. It was pretty cool. I actually got to work on the same team as my mom. After I was able to get a position at that same school in kindergarten, which was where I wanted to be when I first went to school to become a teacher. So it was kind of a really cool experience because originally I thought I wasn't going to be working at that school. But I ended up there and I've been there ever since. So 4 years in kinder now and one in third grade.
So what inspired you to become a teacher?
Well, it was actually kind of a very kind of crazy experience, I want to say. Like, I actually didn't go to school to become a teacher originally. I wanted to be a nurse. I always knew that I wanted to work with kids. I've always been very driven to just help young children and, you know, just see them grow. So I actually wanted to be a pediatric nurse, but once I started going to school for that, I kind of realized that I wasn't really enjoying going to school. Like, I was doing it, but like, it just, I didn't feel like that little spark. Like, it was just like, okay, I'm going to school, but it's just really what I want to do. And so as that year went on, my first year of college went, like, I was just like, this is not what I want to do. And like, I still knew I wanted to work with kids. So, funny story, my mom was like, well, why don't you try to just take an education class, just take one and see what you think about it. And so I took the class and I loved it. I loved the professor that I had. I loved like all the pedagogy and just all the cool things you learn about helping children. And that's kind of what like sparked it, kind of my mom, but also like that first professor that I had at GCU. Really kind of helped me, like, just, you know, find that passion for teaching.
I asked her what are the requirements of becoming a teacher. She said first she would have to get a background check, and then she would have to get a fingerprint clearance card. It also depended on what grade level a teacher wanted to teach. She studied early childhood, and she would do internships for classes. The amount of hours she had to do were 100 hours. She did 8 weeks in preschool and 8 weeks for kindergarten. I also asked her questions about how teachers having to teach online now because of COVID-19. I asked her, how does she keep her students motivated and engaged? She broke down their day. A certain group would meet on a different time and day. She would also have a social emotional learning where students and teachers can communicate. She would have fun questions, games, and sing songs. And then she would break students down for a breakdown room so they can talk to each other. And this is what she had to say at the end of the interview.
Do you have any words for future teachers? Like, you know, to motivate them, I guess?
I think the biggest thing is that, you know, if, you know, whoever listens to this, you know, and you want to be a teacher, that if you're going to go into teaching, you know, just remember that you're going in for the kids, and to always make sure that you put them first, and, you know, obviously take care of yourself as a teacher, because, you know, being a teacher is super special. And sometimes I think people, you know, as you go through your teaching years, you might lose that a little bit. And then a kid's going to come along and they're going to remind you why you decided to be a teacher. Or even like, if you're just becoming a teacher, somebody must have inspired you to be a teacher. So always try to remember those really positive thoughts about why you want to be a teacher. So you're not going to be a millionaire being a teacher, but you are going to have a very full heart. And you're going to have a lot of amazing stories that you're going to be able to tell later on in life.
So this is the end of the interview. I would like to thank you, Karina.
At the end of the interview, she told me that on March 22nd, her school was open for in-person class, meaning that she was able to teach in person again.
Hello, today I'll be interviewing Tawana. She has been a student at Glendale Community College for over 4 years now. She is currently studying for her prerequisites in pharmacy and plans to transfer to Midwestern's pharmacy program soon. Earlier, we talked about her learning experience at GCC before the pandemic. She explained that she loved it and that she managed herself well despite her recent diagnosis of type 2 diabetes. How has the switch to online affected your learning experience?
Being that my age is 42, we were not raised in an age that was dominated by computers and electronics and all the gadgets we have now that we use and we have to use for school. I went to a reservation school. We barely had a little computer in there, and it was an Apple computer, and we played Oregon Trail. And that's all I had an experience with computers until I was like in seventh or eighth grade. And then after that, I never went to high school, so I never experienced computers at all. And then working as an adult, I started having to teach myself how to use computers. But now it's like I have to learn how to use all the software. I have to learn how to use Canvas. I had to learn how to use everything a little bit more in depth than I had knowledge of before. And nobody really tells you how to use this. You have to go find it in Google. And if you're somebody who doesn't even know how to use Google, then you're kind of stuck. So it makes it frustrating. And then especially being at home, making sure I'm there for my live sessions. And me being the person I am, also, I treat school like my job. I like to go to school. I like to go leave my home, go to class. That's my job. Go in there, do my work, spend lunchtime there, either use it for work, like homework or something, or have a little lunch, then go back to class again, and then come home. Compartmentalize? There you go. I do that to my life, and I like it, and it makes me feel good because it's just the way I work. So now that I'm home, and now I'm in my space where I usually rest and where I unwind at, and now I'm being told I have to work in it. It's not working out. It's like oil and water. They will not mix. I'm still struggling with that. And I'm only taking one class right now, and I feel overwhelmed. And I can't figure out how some people like yourself or anybody else are taking full load classes, and you're constantly up against the wall because you know a deadline's coming. And it seems like the teachers think because you're home that you have more time to do more work. So they give you more work. And it's like, okay, just because I'm in my house does not mean I have all this time for work. Being that I'm married and I have 3 children, I mean, some of my children are a little bit grown, but I still have one in school that just starts overlapping, and it doesn't work out because you're here and you're the female or the, well, I guess in my case, I'm the boss. So I'm kind of like, when I'm sitting there, it's like I'm not really turned off or closed to them. So they keep coming at me with stuff if they need help with stuff.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to go to the campus and be there in person, because then you have that space that's just basically for work versus being at home where it's rest and vacation time, relax, unwind. But now that's not there. It's all in one place and it makes it hard.
Yeah. Now that you've experienced taking classes online, do you think that you'll have an easier time taking in-person classes?
I already knew that online and hybrid classes were not for me. And at the beginning of my college career, I actually learned how many classes I can take and at what time I can take them, because I've taken classes early, later, in the middle, 3 in 1 day, 2 in 1 day, 4 here, there, 4 there, there, try to make it to where I had to adjust it to learn. And like I said, I started in 2016. So that's a lot of semesters that I got to use to learn all that stuff. And I'm finally to the point where I have learned exactly what, how I learn best. And now this happened, and this is like my worst nightmare. This is like the worst way I could possibly ever learn. So technically I'm taking classes, trying to go through this one class, and I kind of feel like I'm not even learning anything. I just feel like I'm just going through motions. I'm trying to keep up with it, but at the same time, I'm not really paying attention to it because I have other things going on currently in my life, and it just makes it harder. So it's like, it's too chaotic. I mean, I wish there was a way people could just push a pause on the whole thing and be like, okay, let me breathe for a moment. Because you can't just do that. Your student loans still sit there. Your debt for school still sits there. They're not going to throw that away. So, and then right now I'm currently paying for it because, like I said, I started in 2016 because I didn't go to high school. So I have quite a bit of stuff. So now I'm stuck paying for my classes. So I'm accountable for having to pay for my classes out of pocket. But yet I'm still not quite getting it because I just don't learn that way. But I understand that. And I'm just trying to, I'm like, okay, well, then at least I can do is just go through with the class, do the best I can, hope for the best, but at the same time, understand that not to be mad at myself if I do fail the class. But at least I get to see it and I can take it again. I mean, yeah, I'll have to pay for it, but there's worse things I could spend money on.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we go?
I think we just have to be patient with ourselves and let this thing go by. And let's hope that classes come back in a session again. And we just got to take it day by day and don't be angry with yourself. Don't be hard on yourself. It's just the way things are. And if you're good at learning online, I'm proud of you because it's not for me, but I'm proud of you guys. So thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Great job, guys. Finishing us out, we've got a couple more interviews on the more professional side. From James Cuperus and Ariana Vieira Garza.
The man I am interviewing is Webb Pickersgill, and I am interviewing him for his expertise in the video game and media industries. What is it that you do, and who do you do it for?
Yes, I am. I work for Deck Nine Games. We're a small little studio out here in Colorado, the Denver, Colorado area. We're between Denver and Boulder. And over the course of the last 7 years, I've worked here for about 7 years. I have been many things. I started out as a lead cinematic artist, but then we got a game from Square Enix, which is a large publisher, and the project was called Life is Strange Before the Storm. And for that game, I was the co-game director. So I basically was one of the creative leads on the project. My responsibility was mostly directing the cinematics. Our games are very cinematically driven. They're basically cutscenes, and then you have to make dialogue choices and you have to make moral choices about what to do in situations. And the game plays out based on those choices. So I was the game director for that. And then more recently, a few weeks ago, we announced our latest game. It's called Life is Strange True Colors. That's coming out on September 10th. For that project, I was the performance director or the motion capture director. So basically, and that's where I am now. I'm still at work. Motion capture is what I do. So actually, hold on. Let me see. Can I give you a little peek? Hold on a second. Let me see if I can just give you a little bit of a fun visual tour. Hold on 1 second.
And this is where he shows me his workspace and intimately shows me exactly how he does his job and what it entails.
So that's that. So I started out as an independent filmmaker, which is how I know Andy. We made a film together way back in the day called Romeo and Jules. It was super fun. And we've stayed in touch over the years. So yeah, I worked as a cinematographer, director, editor. I own my own video production company. So I basically had to do all the roles in order, you know, for my clients to finish everything. So all that experience kind of led me to getting this job because this job you have to know editing. You have to know cinematography. You have to know how to work with actors. You have to know all that, you know, lighting and all that. So it kind of was a perfect match for me. Anyway, so that's probably more than you needed to know for the first question, but I'll let that be.
Is there any, particular projects that you remember that you're able to talk about at the moment that, like, stands out? Because whatever information you can give would be awesome.
The last feature film I shot as a cinematographer was a movie called 1111. That one was pretty cool because it starred Charles Baker, who was... he was Skinny Pete in Breaking Bad, if you're familiar with Breaking Bad at all. So he was the lead in this feature film. It was fun. It's Breaking Bad. I mean, he plays Skinny Pete and he's completely like this drug addicted guy. He's all kind of weird and squirrely. In this feature I shot called 1111, he plays a quirky but otherwise normal guy who is a family man, and it's a comedic sci-fi feature film. Super fun. You can rent it on Amazon Prime. And, I really enjoyed that film because, so many things about it. First of all, just the crew, it was really small and tight. I don't like crews that get so big that it's just a job, right? Where you show up and there's different people and you don't know who they are. Everybody's doing their job, but there's no interpersonal connection. So that was one aspect of it. Getting to work with Charlie Baker and, of course, Krista Allen was also in it. She's also another Hollywood, I wouldn't say A-lister, but I think she's like a Hollywood B-lister kind of person. She's been a bunch of stuff, but nothing that really has been like, you know.
I'm Michelle Howland, and I'm the owner and CEO of Blue Steel Security Service. I started this business in particular 7 years ago, June 2nd. It'll be 7 years. Blue Steel Security is a security company. We have armed and unarmed officers. We do approximately 300 communities around the valley, and that includes commercial sites, mostly apartment communities, and HOAs.
Now, regarding your company, Blue Steel, what inspired you to choose this field of interest?
Well, I don't think that I really chose it. I feel like it chose me. I took a look at all the vendors that we used, and I looked at where I felt like I really wasn't getting what I was paying for my owners. And every time I kept coming back to security. And the reason I feel that is because they didn't speak our language. Security in those days was either they would drive through your property, never get out of their car, never talk to anybody, just in and out and they were done. Or they would come in and they would want to tackle people and arrest them. And sometimes they were my residents not doing anything wrong. So I thought, you know, what better thing to do than to create a program that spoke to our language.
Now, do you feel that as a woman, the startup of your business was challenging?
Well, you know, in some businesses it might not be, but definitely the security world was a huge challenge because it's a male-dominated industry. And I thought, you know, they're looking at me like, what does this girl think she can offer security? She just doesn't know what we do. And so it was really challenging because the way that everybody looked at things was through a paradigm of more like police work and enforcing police things. And I wanted to look at it through a customer service eyes and more, as they thought, a girly approach.
During the construction of your platform, did you face any compelling obstacles?
Yeah, the obstacle that I faced was just getting, as I say, getting people to drink the Kool-Aid. I always asked the question when I tried to get them to drink the Kool-Aid is, you know, what experience did those 9 people have with you? And, you know, they never had an answer. And I said, well, they need to have the same experience that they have with my management team during the day. They need to get great customer services at night, just like they do during the day. The other thing that I would ask is when I would approach new things to add to security, one of them was, and this the entire valley hates me now for because we do it everywhere and every company does it, but it was delivering notices. And so the first thing they said to me was, I'm not a mail delivery person. I don't deliver notices. And I said, now wait a minute, this is a security issue. How many times do you go up to the second level apartment and look at it if, you know, you don't have a notice to deliver? They're like, well, we don't. And I said, but if you have a notice that you have to deliver, you're going to get in front of every single door at least once a month. You're going to hear things, smell things, and see things that you wouldn't see from the ground. So I convinced them that it was a security thing and a way to better do our job. And so now we deliver notices while we're there as well.
I have not witnessed your full journey, but I have noticed you offer compassion with your team and clientele. Do you believe your compassion plays a role in the growth of your company?
I do. I think that we're all people. and we all just want to belong, and we want to have a place to call home. And so, you know, you're going to have those people that come up with the craziest stories that you've ever heard, but you have to listen. Sometimes you have to make tough decisions, but I try to focus on the fact that this is a family. Everybody's got that weird uncle in their family. We all do, or aunt, whoever. And, you know, but you need to make sure that they still feel part of the family to make a difference.
Now, I know family is very important to you, and from my understanding is the key ingredient creating a team that represents your business. Can you explain to me the process you underwent to create the wonderful team you have today?
Family's hugely important to me, and that's one of the reasons I decided to stand on the ledge and jump off and start my own company, is to leave something to my family. I've surrounded myself with people at this company that have the same philosophy that I do, that are really caring. Every once in a while, we need to remind ourselves, you know, to step back and think family first. But, you know, I want to leave a legacy. I want to leave a mark on this industry that says, yes, yeah, she was different.
You have been successful thus far. What do you believe your best accomplishment has been?
I think my best accomplishment has been creating this team. It was tough. When we first purchased this company, they only had 3 properties. Today, that, you know, it's going to be 7 years and we have over 300. I think that our success was, we've never gone out to sell properties. Everything has happened organically, and it's been through word of mouth. And I always tell my team, if we do good works, things will happen for us. And the other thing is honesty. I believe in complete transparency. And if we're not able to provide a service for a site, I have no problem saying to somebody, and usually it's a friend of mine, hey, I can't start for 30 or 60 days, sometimes maybe even 90, because I want them to know they're getting what they're paying for. And that is unheard of in this industry. Most people don't say a word about it. And I'm like, it's going to come to bite you in the end. So it's better to be transparent and be honest. So I think that that's what my success has been built on.
From observance, you are always creating goals for yourself and your team. Do you believe your interest in goal setting plays a role in your success within your company?
I do. I think that you have to have a plan. We did have an operations meeting recently where I said, look, our billing has gone down in Phoenix, and Phoenix is our mothership, and so we always have to take care of it. So here's what we need to do to be able to take this next step. How are we going to get there? And when you get to them to buy in on it, and you get them to take responsibility, say, hey, I want to help get there, I think it's huge. If you just have goals in your mind and you don't tell anybody about it, you're not going anywhere.
Did you have any business background prior to this?
I didn't. It's always just come natural for me. By 23 years old, I was a district manager for a jewelry company. And so I've just organically kind of, every time I hear somebody, I'll listen to what they have to say and just kind of grab information. I have 2 huge mentors that I have always looked upon in every decision that I make, and I will call them and talk to them. One is Vicki Allison. She was the owner of Bernard Allison. She's always been somebody I looked to because she was a dominant force in the multifamily industry. And then I have a friend of mine named Julie Brelsford. She started several companies. It's interesting to look at all the people who have never had finished their degree, and yet they're so successful.
Now, given your success, do you have any advice to any up-and-coming female business owners?
Yes, I had this conversation with a gal that is a district manager for a management company, Graystar, and she called me and said, you know, how did you do it? How did you take the chance? And I said, that's exactly what you have to do. You have to believe in yourself enough to stand on that edge and say, no matter what, I am never going to fail myself. I'm never going to let myself down. Once you do it, you have to look at your team and you have to say, no matter what, I will never let you down. And in this company, this could have caused me to be a little bit emotional. In this company, it has been a huge challenge because there were times early on that I had to go to my parents and say, I need to make payroll. I need help because my clients, you know, sometimes wouldn't pay us and we were counting on that money and it wouldn't get here. And I understood the client side because I had been there. You have owners that don't pay on time. And so I was trying to be compassionate to them, but yet my people come first. So there were many times I would drain my savings. I put a second mortgage on my home. I went to my parents. My people have to come first. And that's something as an owner that I think that no matter if you're a man or a woman, you take care of your people, the paper will come, meaning the contracts will come, the money will come. But if you lose the faith of your people, it's over. Call it a day. I just go back to believe in yourself. You'll never let yourself down, and don't let your people down, and you'll be successful.
Now, those were some great interviews. From all of us here at GCC, thanks for tuning in. I'd also like to thank Stephanie Lucas and Andy Nelson for making all of this possible. A huge thank you goes to Balin Mendoza for audio engineering this episode. As always, thank you to the participants for their submissions.